Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Tree. Santa's on his way. He's filled his sleigh with things. Things for you and for me. It's that time of year when the world falls in love. Every song you hear seems to say, Merry Christmas. May your come true, and this song of mine, three-quarter time, wishes you and yours the same thing, too. Way he's filled his sleigh with things, things for me and for you.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. Oh yes, that was Robert Goulet. I know we gals just swoon over him, but he's so wonderful when it comes to music and Christmas music especially, and I'm so delighted we were able to share it with you. And you'll hear the Christmas Waltz with Robert Goulet singing later on in the show. We'll play it all the way through for you. But today we're going to be talking Christmas. This is my absolutely favorite holiday of the year. And I know it is for so many of you listening, and we have a delightful guest, Robert Brenner. He often enjoys being called Bob, which is what I'm going to be calling him on the air today. Christmas through the decades. We're going to be talking about history of Christmas. Bob, thank you for joining us today. Happy holidays to you and welcome.
Thank you very much. The very same to you. Merry Christmas.
Now, you have published two other books in addition to Christmas Through the Decades. You obviously have a passionate love for the holiday, and boy, can I appreciate it. But not only that, you are so respected because you have been acknowledged as the leading expert on Christmas in America. You have been quoted by so many people. You teach school in Princeton, Wisconsin, and there are just a lot of people that enjoy interacting with you because not only are you into the traditions, but you've also become very knowledgeable about the collectibles, the decorations, and all of the different points of information about how this has evolved just from mom and pop somewhere back, you know, who knows when, to today where everybody has the electric lights and that kind of thing that are just a joy every year. I think it gets exciting because we have so many new things that come out. People are so inventive. What was it that started this journey for you that allows you to be like a child?
I think maybe because I never grew up. But I just must correct you. I'm a retired teacher at this particular point. So that has changed. But nothing else has. Actually, I would say it basically started as a young child on our farm. I would decorate outside with cedar trees from the swamp with lights. And we had some things from my grandmother. And I remember going to her house and seeing her tree, which was absolutely stunning and beautiful and fascinating. And that kind of just sat there. And then once I was out of college, I decided I needed a Christmas tree, which everyone has to have. I don't care over the age. And I was at an auction, and I wasn't paying attention at first, and I heard the auctioneer say, won't anybody at least give me a dollar for these ornaments? And so I raised my hand, got those ornaments, and it was like an instant flashback to my grandmother's tree and a few ornaments we had of hers. Everyone was just a memory maker for me. And mm-hmm. then it went from one tree to two trees to three trees, and I think the rest in between there somehow is lost. But that started it, really was that auction that brought me back to my childhood.
There is so much that you have in your book relative to the tradition of Christmas. Let's go back to years and years and years and years ago.
Sure.
The Germans, oh my goodness, the Celts, there's always been a celebration of the winter solstice.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had their tradition. Give us a little bit of history about those so-called pagan peoples and what they started that we ended up incorporating into Christmas.
Well, it was actually their celebration of the god of fertility and the start of a new year. And it was a pagan holiday, and it was the church, the Christian church, that actually then took that particular date, the winter solstice, and put the Christ of Christ's birth there on that particular date, because they needed to get rid of that pagan holiday. And so it is there that actually Christmas started on December 25th. And I think it's also fascinating that the Christmas tree actually goes back to the Middle Ages in its early history, because they would reenact the story of Adam and Eve, and they would hold branches on which would be put apples, and became known as the Paradise Tree, and then became known as the Christ Tree and the Christmas Tree. So it's interesting to see how out of all of these different events, Christmas evolved. And of course, there's a lot of minor people in between there, too, in events that happened.
Oh, sure. Well, most people, any excuse for a party is a good excuse.
Absolutely.
And especially during the dead of winter, because mm-hmm. in Europe, you know, just like in most of the northern areas of the United States, it's dark, it's stormy, it's gray. And when people were celebrating, they were trying mm-hmm. to bring some light, some joy into their environment, because it was a very, very oppressive time of the year.
It was very oppressive. And in fact, in the Midwest right now, we have these short days, so we can kind of get a little bit of an inkling of what that was like.
Mm-hmm. But they didn't have electricity then.
No.
They didn't have what we've got.
No.
I mean, a lot of them were living in these thatched, sod places, and, you know, really depressing when you think about it. So the good old days, they can keep them. Thank you very much. But
I agree.
I appreciate the gift of the holiday as it has been evolved. Now, let's go back into early America.
Mm-hmm.
Because
the Puritans were actually, you know, who founded this country, were opposed to Christmas, because they did consider it a pagan holiday, and they actually passed laws against the celebration of Christmas. In fact, according to records, they worked harder on Christmas Day than anyone, just to kind of spite people who were trying to celebrate Christmas.
Of course,
it was very difficult to celebrate Christmas in early America. It was almost, like, dangerous.
Well, can you just imagine someone saying, you've got to work today, and somebody says, yeah, right, I'm going to have a little cider. You can go ahead and work, and I'm going to go in and have some cider and cookies and pound cake, whatever's available.
Right.
Thank you very much.
One thing that we should note right here, it's jumping ahead a little bit, but Christmas was not a legal holiday in this country until 1891.
And it wasn't
until that particular day that people were guaranteed their day off, which I think is also interesting, that it took that number of years.
Yes, it is.
To become a legal holiday, 1891.
Well, that's a point of information I'm sure my listeners didn't know about. Now, you bring up, right in the very part of your first part of your book, you go into a great deal of history mentioning the Puritans, et cetera. But you also mentioned a group of people, the Moravians.
Right.
Did I pronounce that correctly?
Moravians, absolutely perfect.
Okay. And this is all occurring in the 1700s. Tell us about these people, who they were, what they did, and how they influenced the holiday that we now call Christmas.
Well, the Moravians were actually the Christian groups of people who came from northern Germany into the United States, and they brought with them the celebration of Christmas. In fact, they founded the town Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and named it so on Christmas Eve. And it is in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, that we have the first recorded Christmas tree being decorated with oblaten, the communion wafers, and apples on a little tabletop tree as the very first. And they actually went, how do I put it delicately, they over-celebrated Christmas to kind of spite the Puritans, who were a little bit too straightforward for them.
Mm-hmm. And, too austere.
Yes, way too austere. And we needed to celebrate the birth of Christ. And it really was that group of people who brought so much of Germany to the United States and on the East Coast, celebrating Christmas and decorating trees. And another way it also crept in was through professors, teachers who came from Europe, would teach in the United States. For example, at the College of William and Mary,
mm-hmm.
where a professor put up a Christmas tree in the home he was staying, and it was completely foreign to these people. And the children were just absolutely, you know, they couldn't understand it. And he decorated it all, of course, with edibles, because that was the custom. Nuts,
yes.
And fruit and edibles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it actually, you know, it caught on. Little by little, people then started because they would see the Christmas tree, and it became a custom for every church to have a Christmas tree at Christmas. And so, in fact, for many Americans in the 1800s, that was the one tree that they saw. Because even by 1900, less than 30% of our homes had trees in them. It wasn't until the 1930s that we could almost say in the 90s, you know, 90%
mm-hmm.
or very close to everyone having one.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's also interesting that it took till the 1930s as well.
Yes, it's fascinating how it's relatively new in the
yes.
commercial sense.
Mm-hmm.
But in the typical European sense, and like you said, they had edibles, and many times women would make the cookies and
oh, absolutely.
Different things. And that's what
and
she decorated with. That was, yeah, and oh, marzipan. Oh, goodness gracious, one of my husband's
wonderful.
Favorites. Oh, just absolutely wonderful. Now, let's talk about George Washington and Martha, because there was in the South, there, and of course, you, when you hear the word South, you know, talk about the United States, you think of balmy, warm weather. They don't have snow and ice and sleet and hail like we do in the northern sections of the country. So, but yet, this became a very big holiday, and they were married on the 12th night
yes.
of Christmas, 1759.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they were, and the 12th night was a very special night. Because that was actually the night on which the tree was undecorated, and everything was consumed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think we have to be honest with each other. I think there were a few things that were sneaked off the tree previous to that. You can't
oh, yeah.
tell me, because when we were young, we had edibles on our tree, and we had cherries, and we had a tendency to rearrange the tree with a peppermint stick, and I'm sure they did then, too. But that's why the 12th night, really the 12 days of Christmas is so special.
Mm-hmm.
And I lament the fact that that as a Christmas custom seems to be ebbing in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so. But it's being promoted in different ways. You know, you'll see it with television programs and
absolutely.
So it is a cultural shift that you're seeing, and I can understand why you had the empathy, because they have some people still have those calendars where they count down, and it's a big thing with the children in the house. They get to use these particular calendars. They're only used at Christmas, and then they get to open the door on each.
Yes, the Advent calendars.
Yes, the Advent calendar. So there's some of that that's still being promoted.
Oh, and it is, and I wish that more would be done to that, because I think the expectation and the waiting for Christmas and Santa Claus, and I don't know what you did when you were young, but I think we prayed a little bit more fervently close to Christmas because we didn't want to be bypassed.
Absolutely. And more than that, we would sneak around and try to find out whatever was going on. Because
yeah, you bet.
Yeah, that was
closets,
the
closets, and yes, my parents actually got to the point where we had a basement entryway because we had an old farmhouse. And so then because we were sneaking around looking for the toys so much, they locked the door from the outside, and my father nailed it shut from the inside. So we couldn't get in. We couldn't see anything. It was terrible. We could only look through the peephole, and we could hardly see anything.
I think that's part of the fun for parents many times if they do that. But the kids, they're clever. If they know all the nooks and crannies in the house, they will try to find out what they can. So
absolutely.
It's amazing.
Absolutely. And that's something that hasn't changed. And I think maybe, am I rambling too much?
No, that's fine.
Because I was also going to say that there's so much to cover here in this half hour. I think one of the most interesting things also is that when my mother was a young child, the Christmas tree was brought by Santa Claus or St. Nicholas.
Oh, really?
Because they were German, and they would wake up in the morning, and the tree was all decorated.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was decorated by the gift bearer. And so they never got to decorate the tree. And even though my mother grew up in the 1920s and 30s, they still follow that tradition. But in the early 1900s, many families gradually switched to them decorating the tree as a family custom. And I'm glad that changed.
I am too, but I'll share with you a personal story. My husband was born and raised in Virginia,
mm-hmm.
and his family was on the poor side, and there were 9 children in the family through a period of 20 years. So what they would do at Christmas, and he was second to the youngest,
mm-hmm.
for the little ones, when he was growing up, he said when Christmas came around, there was nothing with presents. You didn't see any presents. You didn't see any tree. There was nothing there. But Christmas morning, the tree was entirely decorated. All the presents were under the tree. And he said when it was just totally magical for him because that you know, they didn't expect anything. But what happened was not unlike what you said. It was going out at midnight. His oldest brothers, who were, you know, like almost 20 years older than he was, they would go out and they would peruse the tree lots. And often trees were just allowed to lay. It's not like today.
Mm-hmm.
They were just laid on the ground and whoever wanted them picked them up.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'd go, they'd get a tree. Of course, the little ones had already been put in bed early.
Right.
So they could go out about 11 o'clock, pick up a tree, bring it home, and then the adults and the oldest of the kids
mm-hmm.
were there decorating, and they had their hiding places for everything. And so when the little ones got up in the morning, it was just a marvelous Christmas miracle for them. It just
incredible. That's special.
But I prefer having the tree set up. The idea of getting up at midnight and, oh, no, that would not work for me at all.
No,
not in today's world.
No, plus I think it's a wonderful event for families to share, too, because ornaments really have a lot of history and memories.
Oh, they do.
And that can be reviewed, you know, at Christmas time if that whole family is together decorating.
It's fun, and it's fun once you have the tree up and you sit down and you look at what's on the tree, and our tree is very eclectic, and my husband will go in and say, I remember when we got that ornament, and we've been married for a number of years, and we would go out, and we would choose a special ornament, and every year we did that.
Well, that's wonderful.
And so you have those wonderful memories. I have gifts from friends, and they're up on the tree, and you can talk about it to people. So I think when you can share that with children or when you are able to do that, let's talk about the Christmas tree customs. Now, you mentioned a book, Kringle's Christmas Tree Book, that was published in 1845.
Mm-hmm.
So what all was that about?
That was the visit of Kris Kringle, who brought the tree, and with illustrations, of course, of those trees, and brought about a real, like, we have to do that. We have to follow that custom because it was so magical. And that really, in this country, was an impetus for us to decorate Christmas trees and become more involved in it
mm-hmm.
because, you know, it was a German custom. And we were slow to take up with that custom until that particular book, because it was published, distributed throughout the United States. I want to say thousands and thousands of children were read the story or read it themselves, and really started our Christmas tree, and also started or continued the custom of the German tree. But I think you're somewhat aware of the fact that the trees in Europe previous to the 1850s were tabletop trees.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the United States. We took that tree off the table, and we went from floor to ceiling with it. And I like to think we did that because as Americans, we figured we could do anything. We could expand. We could do it.
I understand.
If they could do a tabletop tree, we can do a floor-to-ceiling tree.
Now, how did Queen Victoria influence the tree and the custom of
Christmas? By marrying Prince Albert, who was from Germany, Coburg, Germany, and he was accustomed to the Christmas tree.
Mm-hmm.
And when he married her, and in London, he insisted that they would put up Christmas trees, and they did. And of course, since they were the royal family, illustrations and drawings were created of their trees, and the decorations down to details and presents underneath the tree. And it's actually Prince Albert, by marrying Queen Victoria, who took the Christmas tree and, hey, we can do it. It's fashionable. You know, the royal family does it.
Mm-hmm.
It should be all right for all of us to do it. In fact, we should be doing it.
Mm-hmm. Just that mentality, and that's how change evolved.
Exactly. And it quickly then, as I said, through professors and different people coming to the United States, immigrants, it quickly became established in this country in little pockets, especially the Germanic pockets. People from Germany,
mm-hmm,
and Northern Europe.
Now let's talk about decorations for a moment, because
sure,
the Germans, again, we have so many cultural traditions that came from Germany. It's,
mm-hmm,
just amazing.
Yes, we do.
The glass ornaments, and I remember my mother picking these up at like Woolworth's when,
mm-hmm,
I was a little girl, and they were very, very common, but the Germans were the ones that invented the glass ornaments. Am I correct on that?
You are absolutely correct on that. And glass ornaments were created for the people who could not afford the edibles, the expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Because cookies, marzipan, nuts, oranges, that was very expensive. And plus, on the 12th night, it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
So glass ornaments were produced by the Germans for the poor people who could not afford the fruit and the nuts, and that's why the very first ornaments were in the shapes of fruits and nuts, oranges, pears, apples, walnuts. And I find it interesting, and now glass is very commonplace. But at that particular time in the 1820s, it was for the poor people. They could recycle it every single year. They could,
mm-hmm,
bring it out again. They could have oranges on their tree for 10 years,
mm-hmm,
rather than 1 year.
Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, today, your oranges, your nuts, et cetera, are not so expensive compared to some of the glass ornaments that you buy.
No, absolutely not.
I mean, it's just an interesting reversal, and it's fascinating to see how things come about. And,
mm-hmm,
with that, I mean, all of us that have trees, whether they're real or they're artificial,
mm-hmm,
we have these ornaments, we store them every year, they have wonderful memories with them. Your book has just so many wonderful, wonderful stories in it. And, of course, in 1855, Charles Dickens is an individual that added a great deal to the Christmas scene because he wrote a story about the Christmas tree.
Yes, A Christmas Carol.
So you have that, and here we go into a whole, and that's going on today. I mean, that's a story that people still love.
Oh, absolutely. Today. In fact, last evening we saw a presentation of The Christmas Carol.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about Scrooge and the transformation from being stingy and mean and self-indulgent to this man who jumps up and down in glee when he can buy the biggest turkey in the window and send it to the Cratchits. And he can also give a raise to Bob Cratchit when he shows up the next day after Christmas on the 26th. And every time I see that, it brings to my mind the fact that all of us who have more need to really think about people who do not, and especially at Christmas, to make sure that everyone can have a good Christmas.
Candles on trees. Now, that
candles
hasn't been
trees.
Around for a long time, but I was astonished in going through your book to find out, and this is reminiscent of what I saw in Russia,
mm-hmm.
the candles that were used were so thin, and in the cathedrals in Russia, they have these exceedingly thin candles that you can hold in your hand and you can mold them. I mean, they melt so easily. But that's apparently what was used before, and of course that ended up being something that was not a good thing because you had to be very careful. You could burn everything around quickly.
Sure, it was rope candles that we warmed in our hands and then twisted around the branches. That was very unsafe, and of course there was wax all over the place. So then candles are made a little bit thicker, and we put it on the branch, and then from below we pushed a little tack up to hold it onto the branch.
Mm-hmm.
But we still had the trouble with the dripping oil. So then we put a little tray underneath. And then that was improved upon because then we created clip-on candle holders that would clip onto the tree. They weren't so safe. So then we created counterbalance holders, which had a clay ball or a decoration at the bottom that you could put out on the tips of the branches. And I guess what amazes me, if we talked about candle lighting of the tree, we could probably talk about 3 hours of all the different inventions and patents of people and things they took out. But they were determined to light the tree, and yes, to go from rope candles to the very thick candles with the clip-ons on the tree, I mean, absolutely wonderful. And then there was electricity.
Ah, and that's a whole another story, isn't it?
Absolutely, and what was so interesting about the first electric lights, people were very frightened of them in the 1882, the very first, and into the 1890s, and they were advertised as electric candles because they couldn't get people to buy them because they thought candles would be much more safe.
Interesting.
Plus, a set of 16 lights would have been the equivalent today of probably about $200.
Wow.
So they were for the very, very rich, which is probably another reason that they didn't catch on quite so quickly. So it took actually into about 1910 to get people to look at lights rather than use candles. And then after World War I, then they became much more prevalent. But we remember that that was the series lighting. So they were all wired together. So we had a set of eight. If one went out, they all went out. And you had to find the bulb that had burned out.
Yes.
Very frustrating. Until World War II, and we wired them independently. And that actually came about as part of war technology, which I think is interesting.
Bob, I'm sorry, but we are running out of time.
Oh, good heavens.
I talked
too much about Christmas.
Oh, that's all right. That's why I enjoyed having you as a guest today. Christmas Through the Decades, Robert Brenner. This is a book that would be in your library. You could share this with your kids, your grandkids, if you're a teacher. This is a marvelous book because he has got so much history. It is loaded with thousands of fabulous photographs that show different antiques that people have saved through the years that you can go through and you can see all of this. Bob, do you have a website regarding your Christmas history and all of this other stuff? If somebody wanted to take a bunch of students to it or just wanted for their own curiosity to go have a look-see, that they could do that?
Absolutely. ChristmasInPrinceton.com.
All one word. Spelled out? Christmas?
In Princeton. ChristmasInPrinceton.com.
It has been a delight having you as a guest. His book, Christmas Through the Decades, Robert Brenner. I call him Bob. Go to ChristmasInPrinceton.com. Wonderful, wonderful place to visit. And, Bob, again, thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you very much, Donna. Merry Christmas to you and your entire family.
Thank you, sir. The same to you. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back with some good things. Don't go away.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTaP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bell time and jingle bell time. Dancing and prancing in Jingle Bell Square. In the frosty air. What a bright time. It's the right time to rock the night away. Go gliding in the one horse sleigh. Giddy up, jingle horse, pick up your feet. Jingle around the clock. Mix and a mingle in the jingling feet. That's the jingle bell rock.
Jingle well, Jack, it's toes tapping mine where I mean, I just really like it. You know, here in the Pacific Northwest. Where I'm broadcasting from, oh, frosty air, woo, we're getting it here. It's coming in with a passion. High winds, temperature is going to be dropping to below freezing very shortly. In fact, they're predicting snow in our part of the country, and we shall see what we shall see. But anyway, I just thought that that would just be a great song, and I love Jingle Bell Rock. That frosty air just seemed to be appropriate. Speaking of frosty air, and hey, this weekend I am going to be doing an appearance, in fact, tomorrow at the Dickens Festival at Stadium in downtown Tacoma. Those of you that are listening that are in the Western Washington area, I'm going to be appearing at King's Bookstore. I'm going to be there from 11 until 5, and I'll be doing many consultations while I'm there. The Dickens Festival is so much fun. In fact, if you're planning on coming out, bundle up, because those temps are going to be cold. Go to dickensfestival.net, and you'll find out about all of the wonderful things they've got planned. And who cares? As long as you're dressed warmly, it's a lot of fun. It's just a wonderful way to get into that feel for Christmas. And I and a number of other people are going to be all dolled up. Yes, we're going to be in costume. So if you wanted to wear a costume, you could do the same thing. So go to dickensfestival.net. I will be doing many readings, like I said, at King's Bookstore in downtown Tacoma. And what I want you to know is that part of the proceeds are going to be going towards a facility called the New Phoebe House that is being developed for the purpose of helping people who are less fortunate get through a rough time, have a safe place, and then be able to go out into the world and be able to do what they want to do. So again, tomorrow I'll be appearing there, 11 to 4, or 5 rather, and go to dickensfestival.net and you'll find out all of the information. Then, don't forget, you just heard about Teresa Tapp's Fit and Fabulous. Well, Teresa's going to be on the air with us and in a few days, but I wanted to let you know we are giving away, we're having a drawing. Teresa has graciously put together a 3 gift packages, 3, each of them worth over $100. If you would like to get her free DVD on body brushing and then the free 15-minute workout, and I swear by both of them, they are just fabulous, you will have the opportunity to do it. So what you need to do, you need to send me an email. Send me an email, and I want you to put in the subject line, the Donna Sebo Show, and then put in the code DSS-30. DSS-30, because that represents the drawing that we are doing. And in the last week of December, we will be doing that drawing, and I will be announcing the winners on the air. Also, in your body of the email, be sure you send your contact information. And if you have already submitted, submitting again is not going to do any good because you're only going to be entered in one time. So everybody has a chance. Hey, if you've got a friend you think would make a wonderful gift for, put their name in. It's okay. We don't care. The more participating, the merrier. And so we will be making that announcement. But I'll tell you what, I've toned up 25 inches overall since January of this year, and I'm looking forward to doing even better next year. So be a part of the drawing. Send me an email at donna@delphiinternational.com. Put in the subject line, the Donna Sebo Show, code DSS30. DSS30. And I'll be glad to enter you into that drawing. I really think it's a great way to get fit and fabulous in 2009. Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, you know, when it gets cold, often we want a special drink. And I know a lot of people are really big on coffee and lattes and that type of thing, and they are absolutely wonderful if that's your favorite drink. But there's nothing like a real good cup of hot cocoa. Not a thing to equal it. And depending on what your preference is, some people like marshmallows in their hot cocoa, other people like whipped cream, but if there's just a magic with the chocolate. Now, this is something that you can do. This is a cocoa recipe. This is for one serving that I think that you'll enjoy. If you're in a hurry and you don't want to go through the process of using the real chocolate in with the hot milk and blending it and adding the sugar and doing that, you've got all of these convenient cocoa packets, and you can just pull out a cocoa packet. You can use milk, whatever the directions call for, and then when it's nice and hot, what you want to do is to put one of these candy mints, you know, the chocolate mint candies, often they serve them at restaurants, you know, just a little bit, and maybe a mini candy cane as a stirrer, and then you could put whipped cream, but that chocolate mint melts in it. Now, for those of you that might be on a diet and say, Donna, this is not nice. We're in the holiday season, and I'm trying to keep my waistline slim. I worked so hard to get here. Hey, you can still have the flavor, but you don't have to have the calories. You can get a low-cal cocoa mix. You can use a non-fat milk if you want. And if you decide that you want to have a mint, then that little tiny thing of real sugar isn't going to hurt you. But also realize that the whipped cream, if you put whipped cream on it, you can get fat-free half and half and whip that stuff. Really whip it. And it'll just be nice and frothy. Add a touch of vanilla to the whipped cream. And if you want to use a sweetener or stevia, add just a touch. Oh, hey, you don't have to have hundreds of calories in that cup of cocoa. Not at all. Doesn't take too much to figure out how you can figure out something delicious to have. Satisfies that chocolate craving without that chunky bunch of calories that you don't want to add to your diet. So either way, however you like it, there's nothing like chocolate. And another trick I found with cocoa is that if you take a little bit of extract, just a tiny bit, like a peppermint extract, and just put a drop of that in your cocoa. Ooh, good stuff. Okay, I've got some things I want to share with you. First of all, I want to tell you the phone line you can call in on if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here's what you do. Go to 877-876-5227. That's right, toll free. 888 is also available, 815-9756. That's for Canada and the U.S. And then we also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. And as I say, just about every day, I'm an information resource. And if you would like to interact with me to see what my perceptions are about you, hey, give me a call. It doesn't cost a thing. And you might learn something about yourself that maybe you know, maybe you didn't know. But that's what I'm here for. So don't forget, you can give me a call, 877-876-5227-888-815-9756. I've mentioned on the air before that I'm a big believer in blood donations. This is very important to me, and I donate blood as often as I can, which is about every 2 months, because it takes 8 weeks for your body to rebuild your blood store in your system. But to me, it's important because I know the difference that it makes in people's lives. For every pint of blood that is given, it can save 6 people's lives. And I've had friends that have needed transfusions for surgeries and all kinds of things, and sometimes they needed like 24 pints of blood. It was very, very serious. And I think of our military, so many people injured, and it has meant a great deal to them. Now, they are trying and have been working towards this for a long, long time. What can we do where human blood can be utilized in such a way that we can actually grow it? Because blood is living, obviously. That it's just what we have to have working properly. Now, this past August, apparently there were some researchers that demonstrated a method of using human embryonic stem cells to generate functional oxygen-carrying erythrocytes. Erythrocytes, that's what they're called, or red blood cells, in sufficient quantities so they could be used for transfusion. Now, they're not quite the same as natural red blood cells. The proteins that are in the blood cells are very characteristic of fetal and embryonic cells rather than of mature red cells. And they call them erythroid cells rather than something else. Now, there's no nucleus in these red cells, which is a distinguishing feature of mature red blood cells. And they are using all kinds of resources trying to figure out a way where if there were a large emergency, that there could be this reconstituted blood. And it can come from a very, very small source. And this is something that as they get further and further along in making their breakthroughs, the body has an amazing way of taking sometimes a substitute like this and actually reconstituting it. It's amazing. So there is a lot that's being done here. But in lieu of that, and because of where we are in the world today with technology, and during the holiday season, so many times there are accidents and emergencies that maybe otherwise would not occur because there's so much activity going on. People sometimes get a little careless. They do things. They're not as safety conscious as they should be. So just keep in mind, if you can go down to your local Red Cross or to the local blood bank, whatever community you might be in, won't you give that pint of blood and know that that is a wonderful gift that you are giving to people that you may never, ever meet, but whose lives you may very well save because of making that donation. So I encourage you to do that. Would you believe that science is finally catching up with the awareness that so many of us have had for a long time, that creatures can recognize themselves in mirrors? There's an ad on television that I just absolutely love. It's this well-dressed dog that once walks in front of this full-size mirror, and he walks back and he looks at himself and he's checking himself out, and then he goes and he gets his ball and looks at himself again, and it's like, hey, I look good. Well, animals have been able to recognize themselves many, many times, and I just find it fascinating that for so many people they said, oh, no, these are dumb animals, they never recognize themselves. Well, they have found, definitely, scientists have dedicated many years to this, that the great apes, bottlenose dolphins, and Asian elephants, they recognize themselves when they're given a mirror test. They recognize who they are. And there has been a big write-up about a magpie, a European magpie, and I got a picture of it in front of me, and he's just pretty as he can be. It is just amazing how they say the magpie recognizes itself. They finally have proven this. They put five magpies in front of mirrors, and three of them showed at least one instance of using the mirror to guide self-directed behavior. And what they did to follow the bird, they marked a yellow spot on the black feathers of each bird's neck and watched them again. They noted how the birds closely examined their reflections, looked in and behind the mirror, or even tried to touch the mark that the scientists had put on them. They said one of the most unusual behaviors in the scientists' observation was that the birds removed the marks by preening their feathers and then stopped preening that particular spot, apparently feeling like everything was the way it was supposed to do. They got the paint off of them. And the birds knew that those marks did not belong there, recognized that they needed to look differently, and examined themselves in the mirror to make sure everything was taken care of. This finding, they say, shows that these creatures are aware of themselves. Fancy that. And they go on and on talking about how they have non-mammalian brains. Well, I don't know what that has to do with anything. They obviously have the capacity to think and organize and survive, so there's something going on. They say there is a new finding now that's really strong evidence for the multiple evolution of cognitive abilities. This is done by a professor who is a lead researcher in psychology at a university in Germany. He said, I think that our research is going to spur some reconsideration of the neural correlates of higher cognitive processes. I always have to chuckle when I hear what I call the super fancy words being used. Anyone that's ever out in nature is very much aware of the intelligence of the creatures that are around them. I think many times as human beings we forget that these creatures can communicate in interesting and unusual ways. My goodness, I've got to take a break. We are going to be back in just a moment. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. And give me a call if you want to chat. We'll be back.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. And give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. Quick like a bunny, because I want to be able to play the beautiful music with Robert Goulet all the way for you today. I wanted to mention something about work. In today's environment, there are so many people being laid off. We've been getting announcements here in the state of Washington, a number of companies, they have decided to cut back severely on their employee staff. So there's a lot of people in the state of Washington, the western area, that this is perhaps going to be a pretty rough time for them. So if you are an individual and you're in business for yourself, don't panic, because I think Paul and Sarah Edwards, they have been guests on my show in the past, and they had some very good suggestions, and I wanted to share them with you today. When everything is going wonderfully, are any of us going to complain? Oh, no, not any of us. We're all just going to be out there doing whatever we're doing. We don't give it a second thought. But when things start tightening up on us, this is something that Paul and Sarah say, start telescoping. And I find that that's an interesting word that they've chosen, because what you want to do is extend or add to the range of services you provide to your existing customers without unraveling the reputation in whatever business specialty you're very, very well known in. So you want to listen for those things maybe your clients need that you could offer to do for them more economically than they could do for themselves, or by turning to maybe some other specialist. And this is something that many times is not taught to people when they're in business. Often when you are in that situation, they say, well, you've got to tighten up, tighten up, tighten up. You tighten up so much, you can't hardly breathe. So how do you create the diversity within your business that allows you to expand so that you can continue to bring in the dollars that are necessary? Well, let's say you're a contractor, if you're doing work at a home or an office, and maybe you notice that there's a way that your customer can, for a very reasonable amount of money, improve their energy costs. They've cut the amount of dollars they're paying out. Well, so then maybe you come up with a concept and idea and it's shared with them. And there's just, all kinds of things. If you're in real estate, then home staging for them if they want to sell. Travel agents, figure out different things where you can integrate into different environments. But just use your imagination. This is Donna Sebo. I know we're just about out of time here, and we're going to be playing a piece of music as we close out. I want you to remember, always your master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. There is so much good in this world. You are a light that needs to shine as brightly as possible, because especially during this time of the year, the more, the merrier. On Monday, we'll be talking with Jan Phillips about the art of original thinking. God bless. Be safe. Take care wherever you are. Drive carefully and slowly. Don't be in a hurry. Believe me, you'll get there safe and sound if you're wise and prudent. This is Donna Sebo. Talk with you on Monday, same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
Frosted window panes, candles gleaming inside, painted candy canes on the tree. Santa's on his way, he's filled his sleigh with things. Things for you and for me. It's that time of year when the world falls in love. Every song you hear seems to say, Merry Christmas, may your New Year's dreams come true. And this song of mine, three-quarters time, wishes you and yours the same thing too. too. Santa's on his way, he's filled his sleigh with things, things for me and for you. Merry Christmas, may your New Year's dreams come true. Yours, the same thing too. Merry Christmas.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.